We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Go Blue with Stu. I am your host, Stuart Douglas. We got special guest, Rob Doster. Rob, how's it going?
Oh, it's going great, man. I just feel like I'm really letting down your listeners. They're all fired up to hear who Stu's going to get next, and it's me on here talking more.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other subject about getting guests. It's not easy out here.
No, you know how it is. Hey, trust me. I do our UConn podcast, man. I get it. It's hard.
Yeah. I'm trying to get Sandman. I'm trying to get strength coach John Sanderson on. It's been like a month in the works. Obviously, they've already flown to London. So anybody on the team is pretty much off limits right now. But hopefully, we'll have some more of that down the road. But today we got you, and I'm not mad about it.
Yeah, I'm here to provide the insightful analysis about the Virginia game, right?
Yeah, Virginia game. I want to look forward to Kentucky. I don't know how much you've watched Kentucky, but we'll break down Virginia.
Way too much Kentucky, I promise you.
There we go. Perfect. Perfect, because I have yet to break that down, and I want to get into that. And the Virginia game, I have so many things to say. I'm going to try and keep this pod short, but there's so many things that I want to talk about because this team is so close. Like, they're so close to being really good. There's a lot of factors that play into it. They definitely have the talent. I know that much. Like, you know, last year's team, they had the talent, but it was like, all right, is it going to bloom? Like, is it going to happen? This team, like, you're like, you've seen it already. Like, all right, it's there. Like, they just got to piece it together to figure it out. Tough game. They controlled a lot of the game, and they're in the lead for basically the majority of the game. And then down the stretch, Virginia was just Virginia, right? They were just solid, got some turnovers, hit their free throws, and were just solid and ended up beating Michigan by 2. But what I really like to see, I'm going to start with some positives, is the offense. You know, well, the what plagued them last year was kind of looking at Hunter, and teams were sending doubles, and then everyone was just kind of looking. Like, okay, what are we going to do? This year, specifically this last game, you saw it in the post. Hunter caught in the post and was already looking where to pass because he knew that double team was coming. They practiced a lot of days on that double team, so that looked good. So they'll start building blocks on that. There's other things we'll get into. But from an offensive standpoint, like, they were just more decisive. Yeah, they hit some shots. I had somebody on Twitter be like, well, you know, offenses look more decisive when they hit shots, but they weren't playing one-on-one, right? They weren't like looking at each other playing one-on-one. You can't do that against top teams. You got to be running the offense. And they were, that was a step forward, I thought, specifically with the double downs. They've been, I mean, it's been 2 years now they've been trying to figure that stuff out.
Yeah, the thing that was so impressive to me is that they were so good. If you've ever seen Virginia play, and I don't know how much Michigan fans have actually watched Virginia, there's two things that they do. Like, they're known for the pack line, which is like everyone kind of packs in the paint. You have one guy pressuring the ball. All the other help defenders have at least a foot in the paint. No drivers, no middle, or no baseline. Force everything into the middle. Force everything to the pack. That's why they call it the pack line. But what Virginia does differently than a lot of other teams that play pack line is they hedge really hard every ball screen. And usually they double team every post touch, like while the ball is in the air. So as soon as you catch the ball in the post, you got a second guy right there in your face. And they just don't let you get post ups. They don't let you back anybody down. And Michigan was moving the ball so well out of it in like the first 10 minutes that they just completely bailed on that. And they were like, yeah, you know what? We have 6'8" Ben Vanderplas who transferred in from Ohio. And we're just going to let him play one-on-one against Hunter in the post because they couldn't rotate fast enough because Michigan was so efficient at getting the ball. You put up 45 points and a half against Virginia. You know how hard that is to do?
Yeah. And that's the decisiveness. That was where it came from. Like, you don't get those open shots unless you're decisive. And they kind of went away from it. And Virginia went one-on-one. It didn't really work for them. They came back to doubling, especially specifically in the last 2 minutes. They caught that one great turnover. Hunter turned it over, trying to throw it to the top of the key. I think Beekman got that one, and then they got that flagrant, that open court foul. But Michigan went away from it a little bit. Like, they were running specifically in the second half. How many times do you think I can say specifically in a podcast?
Well, you could probably specifically say it about 9 more times.
Probably can't. But in the second
half, really tried. If you put in the effort, you probably could.
Yeah. Some guys are really good with that. Yeah, seamless as like a bit. I'll try. I'll try. But in the second half, they were just running these ball screens with Baker setting them in the first screen, or I think maybe Terrence set a couple of them. But they were running double ball screens and then trying to roll that way and like have Joey be the shooter as the pop out guy, Bulldog as Beeline called it. And then have Hunter roll, and then the ball handler was just keeping the dribble alive. Like, they weren't throwing it ahead. So like, they were trying to break down the ball screen in different ways when really you have a hard hedge, and I can't believe they didn't punish him enough for it. You have a hard hedge like that. What's the number one thing you do? You throw the ball ahead like that. Now, bam, that five man's out of position. Like, that five man's tall enough. Their five men were tall enough. Even Vanderplas was tall enough to like disrupt anything that Jalen was going to get, or even Doug was going to get from out of a ball screen. He was going to throw over the top. As soon as you pass that ball off to the wing, strong side man, boom, it's 4-on-3. Like, that five man is out of position and you got enough shooting in the corner to figure it out. They never did it. They just kept trying to like adjust what the ball screen was going to do instead of specifically punishing that man, that five man, for hard hedging. There's a reason you don't see hard hedging in the NBA, right? Yeah. It just doesn't happen. You can't do it. It's impossible.
Now, the problem is like the way that Virginia does it is they hedge so hard, and I just don't think there are college guards that are necessarily good enough to be able to do that, right? Like, you're asking a lot of Jalen Llewellyn, who has not exactly looked like he's been – I mean, tell me if I'm wrong here. Tell me if I'm out of line, but not exactly looked like he's been completely ready for Big Ten level basketball yet. Is that fair?
Yeah. That's fair. But like, to my point, like, I'm not making any point guard create out of a high hedge. Like, you got two people on you. What do you expect any point guard to do? The right to throw the ball. Like, it should be a pass. They had some short rolls in the second half. Like, they were doing a really great job. I thought it was a great adjustment. I think right out of the gate, Jet had a ball screen and Hunter came up to set the screen. Jet didn't even dribble. And then the big man came up to hedge, preparing for Jet to dribble. It didn't dribble. Hunter cut, boom, wide open. And then they moved it, and I think they got a basket out of it. Like, stuff like that. The ball had to move, and that was some game planning stuff. And I think this is – I'm going to be lenient on like, the coaching staff and game planning. Those are some adjustments you have to make. And they did a really good job in the previous two games to adjust for the trapping in the post, and they did a really good job of that. I think they're probably going to see more hard hedging on the way. I don't really know. Is any Big Ten hard hedge like that? I mean, Virginia's pretty pretty unique in that way. Like hard, this, because hedging hard is tough. Like you'll get punished for it. So it's amazing that Virginia can do it so well.
Yeah, you have to be really, really drilled because of everything that you just kind of laid out there. You have to be really, really drilled in terms of your rotations and your help side defense. And UConn does it a lot. There's a couple other teams that do it, but for the most part, I think, especially with the how many big lumbering five men we see in college basketball these days, you just see a lot. Like everyone just kind of plays drop, right? That's what everyone does because that's what that's what you do in the NBA when you have Rudy Gobert. You just play drop coverage,
right? Because that's because otherwise you're just giving up a huge advantage. Remember Beilein all the time, like you're running 1-3-1. He said the only thing you can't give up is a direct line pass. That's it. And it was right there all game. Yeah, the hard hedge, boom, direct line pass to the guard up strong side, and then and it's right there. Like then you can throw it in the middle. You know, guys like Draymond made an absolute Hall of Fame career out of playing 4-on-3. Right? It's not hard, and you got to punish teams for it. So. I don't know. It was a little disappointing from that standpoint, but they did a lot of things pretty well. To get back to Jalen, I think he was the only one that wasn't decisive, the absolute only one. Now, he did get a couple of open jumpers, which he is very capable of doing. He has not shot the ball well. His numbers dispute that throughout his career. The more open jumpers he's going to get, the more he's going to knock down. He's going to be a huge threat for them. But in terms of like playing point guard and creating, he's just not looking at the rim. Like Jet doesn't think, right? Jet just does what Jet does, and he just plays. He had a couple runners where you're like, ah, okay, tough shot. It went in, but you let guys shoot that shot. Like I feel like today's game, especially when you're going to piece together a team like this with young guys, grad players, like you got to let them play the game. You can't stifle them too much because then there goes their confidence. Then you're just trying to player than what you have. Like Jalen can score, and I think he's trying to be like the veteran guy, the point guard. And there was specifically there it is again, one moment that he turned it over. He had that huge turnover at the end, and he was coming off a ball screen, and they didn't Terrence kind of slipped the ball screen, didn't set it really well, and I think Vanderplas didn't really hedge it, and he kind of had a little bit of downhill. He had Clark on his right hip, and he got past the three-point line. Hunter was blocking his way to get to the left side for a layup because he was posting up. He got into the paint. He got a foot in the paint, and he had little Clark on him, and he decided to pass the ball. Jalen last year, I feel like, would have done a spin move, turned around, bam, 13-footer jumper. I don't care who you were in front of my face. That's the type of guy that they need. Like, they need that decisiveness at the end of games. I mean, you can't be passing up shots in a tournament like that.
Yeah, but it's also – you're 100% right, but it's also so hard to go from playing – in the Ivy League to playing at a Big Ten level, right? And I'm sure that there's an element of when you go from being the guy on a small team to being someone that's supposed to be playing a role and being a leader on a team that has an All-American and a, you know, let's be frank, borderline millionaire as the five-man in Hunter Dickinson. Yeah. You have a coach's son that is averaging, what is he averaging, like 14, 16 points and shooting 44% from three. It looks like he's going to be a first-round pick. Yeah. Chet Howard, you know, you have all of this talent on the roster, and you come in, you're supposed to be that voice and that leader. I can see how that would be intimidating. But it's also like you're brought in to not be intimidated by that moment. Like there's a reason why, you know what I'm saying? Like there's a reason why he's brought in to do that job. You need to be able to do a certain role. I think he's talented enough to do it. Right, he was a kid. Yeah. I know he went to Princeton, but he was like a top 100 recruit, borderline top 100 recruit. He went to Princeton. I think it was like, I want to say Clemson recruited him. I want to say there were other high majors that were involved in his recruitment who decided to go to Princeton. So it's not like he's not a talented player. I think he'll figure it out. I do hope that Michigan fans kind of understand. Like, look, there was a level of expectation for this team coming into the season, right? Top 20 or whatever they were ranked. They had Hunter Dickinson. They had Jet Howard. They had all these guys. You got 30 piece by Arizona State. And then you turn around and you play well enough to beat the number three team in America.
Yep.
And I know it's a disappointing loss. And when you're a program like Michigan, like it's very hard to sit here and be like, that's a moral victory. You should be happy with it. It kind of is, right? It's when you get your ass kicked by a team where you have a kid, did you see what happened with Marcus Bagley, the Arizona State player?
No.
He hasn't played since like the second game of the season. And he tweeted out, I just want to clarify, I'm not injured right now, but I mouthed off to Coach Hurley after a game and I got suspended for it. And then he posted that on Twitter. Like he did the notes app screenshot, posted on Twitter. And then like an hour later, he quote tweeted and it was like, I just got suspended for sending that tweet. So like there's all kind of drama in that program. And you got 30 piece by then. That's not good. And then you turn around and you have this kind of a performance, where if they play like this the rest of the season, they're going to be like a top six team in the Big Ten. They're going to be exactly what you thought they were. Right. So I know it's a frustrating loss, but at the same time, it's the kind of performance where you're like, okay, look, we figured this thing out a little bit. You covered. The spread was 3.5. You covered.
Yeah.
Right. Good teams win. Great teams cover, Stuart.
That is very true. God, did they not.
And one more point on that. Virginia is awesome this year. I know they don't really have guys that you've heard of before. Right, they don't have the potential All-Americans like they did when it was Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy.
Yeah.
But Reese Beekman is a stud. That dude's going to be a first-round pick.
That dunk.
They have two terrific on-ball defenders that can both play point guard and Reese Beekman and Kihei Clark. Caden Shedrick is just – he's big and he's athletic, and he understands kind of the job that you're supposed to do as a five-man in that Virginia offense. And then Armon Franklin, who played it – I mean, you guys saw him at Indiana –
yep.
And then Jaden Gardner was a 17 points per game scorer at East Carolina before he transferred in. Ben Vanderplas played on a team that beat Virginia in the first round of the tournament when he was at Ohio. So they have guys that are old. They have a couple guys that are going to be NBA players. They have guys that understand their role. And the biggest thing is it's the top six basically came back from last season. And I know that they weren't great last year. But the biggest thing with Tony Bennett teams is you need to be in that system for a year to learn and get drilled everywhere you need to be and get schooled on that defense. So they're ranked number 3 in America, and they are like legitimately a top 3 team in America. That is a very, very good basketball team.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Still, it's funny that
like blowing Michigan's up. Who's calling you?
Well, coworker.
Coworker. I was gonna guess that was Nan. Was it Nandug on Twitter?
Nandug. Yeah, Nandug. My mom. Yeah, always chirping. My mom. Oh man, she's a treat on social media, to say the least.
she makes me laugh. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, me too. Everybody loves her. It's funny. I agree. Virginia is a top team, but the difference is not that far off. I mean, I've been on Houston for 3 years now. I got Houston, head and shoulders. You know, that'll change throughout the year. Probably we'll
watch Texas tonight against Creighton, and your opinion of who's the best team in America might change.
There you go. So there's only like maybe a handful. Like if Virginia's 3, it's just not that far off from 25. Or 30 or whatever it may be. I mean, you got a lot of these teams, your typical blue bloods that are like, okay, they're fine, but they're not normal. Like anybody can beat anybody. It's going to be an interesting year. And, you know, the whole time I'm watching it with a little bit of, man, this Virginia team can be beat like this. Obviously scoring 45 points is not the norm against Virginia. Like it was there, and you just want some more consistency from Michigan in that regard. But I don't know. They're piecing it together. So yeah, there is a lot.
It's a missed opportunity more than anything else, right? Like you're kind of playing some of these games. Yeah, you're kind of playing with house money at that point. So it's not a loss that's going to hurt you, but it's the opportunity cost. It's that's the kind of win where when you are sitting, I don't want to say they're going to be on the bubble because I think you're going to be better than that. But if you're sitting there and the committee's looking at you and it's like, all right, you know what? They're somewhere between a 6 and a 7 seed. But you know what? They got this win over Virginia. Virginia is a number 3 team in America. They're number 2 in the net. They're number 1 in KenPom. You know, we got, I guess that's why we're going to have to move them up to the 6 seed. And if you're a 6 seed, then you avoid a top 2 seed in the second round of the tournament, right? So yeah, it's the kind of thing that could, that's going to affect you when it comes to the NCAA tournament, seeding, the bracketing, all that kind of thing. And that, that could end up being the kind of thing that keeps from getting to a second weekend of the tournament. But beyond that, take the positives out of it. That's just the way that I look at it, right? It sucks that you lost, but think about the Ohio State game. Keep yourself happy that way.
Oh, Michigan fans are riding that high for sure. They're not upset. And then once that season's over, they're going to get right back on to critiquing more Michigan basketball stuff. But right now, yeah, they're pretty much playing with house money in terms of being a Michigan fan in that regard. But yeah, I think the pieces are there. It's just kind of putting it together with confidence. I mean, knowing your role, like everybody on Virginia knows what they're doing. And Beekman, like what Armon had, what, 4 points or something? And Beekman had 15 in the first half, and he's not usually that type of guy. Like that, you got guys, teams like that, that win, like pick their spots. So it's not, you know, they're not looking around at each other like, oh, what's our plan? Who are you going to drive right now? Are you going to play one-on-one? You know, Michigan was plagued with that all last year, and some of that this year.
I think this is the way that I would phrase it. You have to beat Virginia. They're never going to beat themselves, right? They're going to, even if you put up 45 on them, like, I don't think you look at that and say Virginia played poorly in the first half.
See, this is my problem with like I, as a player, like if you're going to play me one way, good luck. Good luck. You're going to hedge me like that, and you're going to double in the post, you're giving me an advantage. Like, you got to take advantage of it. And so to your, like, for you as a basketball college fan and like knows the landscape, you're like, yeah, you got to beat Virginia. This is what they do. To me as a player, it was like looking at it, like feasting. There's so many open spots. You got to, you got to beat these teams, but I don't know. It was like an insult. It was an insult when teams did that stuff. It was an insult when they played 2-3 zone against me. It was an insult when they were going to like double and like leave me open in the corner. Like, you got to take it as an insult and punish these teams. But it just looked like they didn't know how to do it. And I don't know. Maybe that's Virginia's key to success, is like, oh yeah, it's college basketball. Most teams don't figure this out, 1 through 5 players on the court, which is,
that's happens. The thing. Like that, that's what makes them so good. You know exactly what you're going to do, and you just can't do anything about it because they are so good at it. And that's why it took them, you know, that's why it takes a little time for Virginia to kind of get that thing. When they lost everybody, lost Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, and DeAndre Hunter from the team that won the title. It took them like 3 years to get back to the point where they had guys that were old enough and veteran enough and understood what you had to do within the system. So I hear what you're saying, but like, I've watched enough Virginia basketball to know that like, there's a lot of teams that are like, why the fuck can't we figure out how to beat this hard hedge, or why can't we figure out how to, what to do with this double team? It's like, yeah, they're really good at it, man. I don't know what to tell you. It's a pain in the ass.
No, it's true. It is true, but I don't know. I kind of want a shot at Virginia again in the tournament. I don't know. It's something's irking me about it. But to talk about ball screen defense from a Michigan standpoint, that was one of the three takeaways from the game. We talked about it before, earlier in the pod, like drop coverage on ball screens. Like, it's huge in the NBA. It's huge with these big lumbering fives. And we've been running it with Hunter all year long. And I understand it. And you can come at it from a different standpoint. Like, I get it. You got to save Hunter. You don't want him gassed the last 10 minutes of the game because he's hedging everything. Mm-hmm. There comes a point where you can't be letting the ball handler have straight line drives to the basket. Like, if you give up a straight line drive, help side defense is not going to do anything. At that point, you're overcommitting, and then you're giving up open threes. So there's some point where Hunter's got to be a little more keyed in on using that 7-foot wingspan and his big frame, and not have hands down hunched over 10 feet back. Because, like, there's plenty of skilled guards in the country. You catch one guy, and he's going to, you know, drop coverage for Luka Doncic, for example. This is an extreme example, but, like, good luck. Good luck playing that. And all it takes is one point guard to be like, yeah, sure. Like, we'll run this over and over and over again. And they got, you know, matchups is everything in the tournament. Mike got a little lucky with certain matchups in the tournament last year, and they got the Sweet 16. And this is going to be a problem for them again. It was a huge problem against Virginia. Like, they played good defense. They gave up only 70 points. Like, it's not horrible. the way they got scored on, I thought was not great.
And it was also 62 possessions, right? Virginia plays slow. If you give up 70 to Virginia, that's like giving up 85 to a normal team.
Yeah.
And I got the KenPom page open now. That's 1.13 points per possession, which is not.
No, they were bottoms of. Yeah,
that's not good.
Can you win doing it? Sure. You got to score more, but I don't know what the solution is here. Like, they got to be just a little more tuned in. To your point, Virginia knows exactly what they're doing, and even if one doesn't work, like, they're going to stick to it. Doesn't even look like Michigan is really executing what they want to execute.
Yeah, I guess it's drop coverage is never. You're basically betting on the point guard not being able to make a play, more or less, right? Because if you have someone that's good at when he gets somebody on his hip and is able to kind of keep it, I don't know what you guys called it. We said keep the defender in jail, right? If you keep that defender on your hip. You have someone that knows how to do that and is kind of corral the dribble, and you're basically playing 2-on-1 as soon as and if anybody helps, and that point guard's got an easy pass to someone shooting a three. So drop coverage is, to me, it's a difficult thing to play. But I understand why you got to do it, right? When you got the Hunter out there. Let me ask you this, because it feels like to me, Hunter is one of those guys where you know he's going to show up in the biggest games, right? So you got Kentucky coming up this weekend in London, right? That just feels like the kind of game he's going to show up and you're going to get 28, 12, four blocks out of him. Because he's going up against Kentucky. It's national television. It's in London. It's Oscar Tshiebwe, reigning national player of the year. Right. That feels like a big game Hunter kind of a game. Is that fair to say? Like, does it seem to you like I don't want to say bored with some of these non-conference games, but it's like it's year three. He's been through it. He's had a couple tournament runs. Is that the kind of thing where he needs that little bit of extra juice to get him going?
I think so. You saw that last year at the beginning of the year. I think Arizona State, he didn't have the juice that he did against. Now, I think a lot of that was the focus on the offense, right? They're like, we're feeding Hunter right now. And it doesn't matter if we're going to give it to him at 15 feet. Like, we're playing through Hunter. Like, he's going to knock down some jumpers, fine, but we're going to give it to him. So some of that,
I don't also think pissed Hunter off the entire roster. Like, he goes, we're going to beat it by 20. Maybe you don't want to go out there and put that out in the universe publicly before you go play.
Yeah, no, you definitely don't want to do that. And then not back it up.
If you did that, if you went on a podcast, right, before a game against anybody, and you said we're gonna beat him by 20. What are you talking about? What would Beilein have done to you?
Beilein would have freaked out. He'd have lost his mind. I did that once, kind of against. Not that far, but we played at Northwestern my senior year, and somebody asked me about the crowd, and I was like, they're not that loud. It's really not that bad. Honestly, there's a lot of Michigan fans, and I show up to warm ups, and I'm just getting berated. They have like their physics books open while they're braiding me from the student section, quarter filled, and I'm like, you guys aren't even all here. Like, what do you mean? Everyone hated me for it. And I'm like, I didn't say anything that was wrong. And at the end of that game, the "Go Blue" chant was the loudest thing in the gym the entire night. And I was like, yeah, this proves my point. So you gotta back it up. I spoke truth. What I thought were true, they came true. Yeah, to do that and not back that up. I mean, to do that in general, Beilein would have lost his mind, I think. You know, Hunter gets away with more stuff, though. Like, if I would have done it, no, I would not have gotten away with it.
Well, it's a new era, man.
It's
the NIL era. I don't want to say that on the pod, but yeah, it's a new era. There's definitely a player empowerment, and players have more say over things.
Yeah, but the point is, you got to back it up. Like, you got to back it up. And yeah, Hunter's going to be juiced for Tshiebwe. Like, no doubt about it. I think he was pretty juiced for Virginia. I don't think he brought it the same way that he did against Arizona State. But I think he's motivated definitely for a Kentucky. Now, to get to this matchup in general, like, I'm biased. I don't think Tshiebwe is all that great. What he can do for Hunter, and which could be a problem for him, is getting him out of position. You see Hunter get a little tall and then get pushed out to 15 feet. You get guys that are way a lot less than him pushing him out to 15, 16 feet. And don't get me wrong, he can score from that distance, but I think Tshiebwe is athletic enough to at least push him out and then stay with them and contest those jumpers and then contest anything he's going to put on the dribble. Like, if Hunter can get to 5-6 feet, lock him in jail with that right shoulder and get a hook, I don't have any any chance of defending that.
I think the biggest thing that Hunter needs to avoid is getting in foul trouble. It's very easy to get.
What
in
was
foul
he doing? That was my thing with that dead ball flagrant or dead ball. That was wild.
Yeah, who knows? But Shibuya's a guy, like, he's so strong and he's so aggressive on the offensive glass that it's very easy to if you're not all the way locked in on every shot that goes up, if you're not all the way locked in every time you try to get a box out on him, it's very easy to kind of get the lazy, like, he gets offensive rebound, you give the swipe, don't really hit him, but you know, when you go like this, officials are going to call it. It's very easy to pick up a couple of those, and you do that, and then you're going into the bench, and all of a sudden, like, Shibuya's just eating. I agree with you on your, when you say, like, Shibuya isn't really all that. He is the absolute best role player in college basketball. Like, he's not a go-to guy. He's not someone that you throw the ball to on the block and just kind of let him go to work, right? When the biggest issue that Kentucky has is that their offense kind of comes down to this idea where we got to run stuff through Oscar because he's the player of the year, right? We got to get him the ball. We got to find ways to make it work. And what they'll do is they kind of end up getting him post-ups from about 8 or 9 feet away. And, like, that's just not his game.
Yeah.
No, he's not overly skilled. He's not someone that's going to knock down jumpers. He's not someone that's going to turn and face, like, jab one dribble, spin back to a hook on his over his left shoulder. What he does well is he does it better than anybody in the country. Like, his motor never ends. He is relentless on the offensive glass. And he's one of those dudes where, like, calling him just strong is the wrong way to phrase it. Like, you know how there's those guys where no matter how hard you're, like, arm barring them, how hard you're pushing against them, like, they just walk and go wherever they want. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it's just,
Deshaun Sims called it army strong.
Yeah, he's army strong, man. Like, you can't keep him from getting where he wants to go. And when he's going to get an offensive rebound, the other thing is, watch this closely because it just baffles me. Like, his shoulders are wide, his arms are long, his hands are huge. And when he goes up and gets a rebound, it's like, he's like swallows it. It just, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the best way that I can kind of phrase it, because he just goes up and he just grabs it. And it's just like, yeah, no one else has a chance of getting that. And then when he has his hands around the ball, his, like, fingertips are touching. It's, you just have no chance once he gets his palms on it. But
I think go ahead. Okay. It's funny, like, how aggressive he is. It's going to work to Hunter's advantage when Hunter's on offense. Mm-hmm. And it's going to work Hunter's disadvantage when Kentucky's on offense, and he's going to have to actually follow him around and box him out and just can't rely on being taller than everybody else.
And you absolutely cannot. You got to put a body on him. That's what he does great. And there's two things it allows you to do. One, you oftentimes need to put two people on him to keep him from getting on the offensive glass, which opens up lanes for other people to get to the offensive rebounds and kind of get tip dunks. It makes it so that you kind of limit what other teams can get in transition. Cause, I mean, you really only need to send him and one other guy to the offensive glass, and you're going to be a top five offensive rebounding team in college basketball. And he's so good on the defensive glass, you can kind of get leak outs, and it allows you to kind of get easier buckets in transition. But, like, their best offense is missing a shot and letting Shibuya go and get it. You know, you're going to watch Kentucky play and you're going to be like, what the fuck are they running? Like, what is it? It's not 2006 right now. Like, what is this offense? What are you doing? And I've been pretty critical of Cal this year. Like, I don't think he's finding ways to kind of maximize this team. They still run the same stuff that they ran when you were playing, right? And they haven't modernized anything. It's the same sets. I swear to God, if you watch this game and you go back and watch film of the John Wall team, when they had when Eric Bledsoe was there and those guys, it's the same sets and the same off. Everybody knows what they're running. They don't have the talent to be able to kind of win matchups when you know what's coming, right? There's teams out there where you can know what's coming and it doesn't matter because they're just good enough to beat you, right? And then there's teams where they're able to win. They're able to be effective because they just keep you guessing, and you have, like, you'll react to a play you think is coming. They got a counter drawn up and you're going to get a back door. You get a dunk out of whatever. Right. Bill Self is great at designing those counters. Cal's not that guy. He can't scheme ways to get Shibuya Duckins where all he has to do is seal, turn around and lay it in. He can't find ways to get guys. He's got some shooters on the team. He can't find ways to scheme them open shots. There's no, like, two-man games. They're not really running ball screens, and the guy they're running ball screens with can't shoot. All you got to do is go under it and just dare him to shoot when he's throwing it off the side of the backboard. Like, it just – they have too much talent on that roster to be as bad as they are. And they're not, I don't think that they're very good. Like they're fourth on KenPom right now, which is baffling to me. I don't understand.
Really?
I think Michigan wins this game.
So do I. I think they match up well, specifically how Michigan wants to play defensively. Like you tell me, you watched Wheeler enough. I watched him a little bit, not a great shooter, small, really wants to pass the ball. If you're going to run a ball screen with him, drop coverage isn't bad, I don't think. I mean, you can tell me I'm wrong, but I think it kind of bodes well for Michigan to kind of play that more against him and be like, all right, we're not going to let Reeves create all that much, and we're going to make sure, you know, Shibuya isn't going to get a dunk off this from a drop pass from Wheeler.
So I don't think you need to play drop coverage against him, because I think you just go under ball screens, right? Like
they tried that against Virginia, though, and then they do, you know, you get him going under once, you come back around, and then the guard's out of position and you're all out of whack there. Like they gotta figure that part out.
But Kentucky's not doing anything that creative. Like there's nothing creative about it. They just set a ball screen for Wheeler and it comes to his left and you just go underneath him. And if he goes back under it and shoots, like that's what you want. So you just play when Notre Dame beat him last year, they basically just stood the point guard like at the foul line and just said, go ahead. You know, when you're playing pickup and you're just like, yeah, that's the shot we want. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Shoot that. Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. That's the shot we want. That's what Notre Dame did to Sevier Wheeler in Kentucky. And Sevier had 26 in that game, but they ended up losing because they couldn't, like, you just completely destroy anything they want to try to do offensively. And you just go under all the ball screens. Like it's that simple to me, right? Because if you go under it, you're not getting anybody coming off. You don't have to worry about the two against one. You're never going to get a roll because Hunter's just standing right there. And the risk is someone stepping back and getting a wide open jumper from the top of the key. And that's what you want in that situation.
And I talked to Saadi Washington, assistant coach, on the pod a couple weeks ago. And I was specifically asking about shutting down Imani Bates for their game against Eastern Michigan. He's like, you know, he gave me the, you know, professional answer. You know, they got a lot of threats on their team. We got to play for everyone. They got talent. We got to teach these guys how to play team defense. You know, they're still trying to mesh everyone together in terms of like team defense, mm-hmm. like, you know, how Tony Bennett has it. You know, they're trying to piece all that together as they go. But there's some times where you just got to shut a guy out or give up certain options because it's too advantageous. Like, you got to be denying Imani Bates the ball, I think, as soon as he hits a couple threes. And they really didn't do it. With Wheeler, I don't know if they're going to – I mean, they'll go under just like they did with Clark. But they haven't executed it super well. I mean, I think Virginia still did a decent job of getting stuff out of it or moving on to the next play. If you're going to tell me, like, Kentucky is not going to be super creative, like, you're going to go under and they're going to have an issue with it and kind of stand there, then, yeah, by all means, go ahead and do it. But I kind of worry that – I don't know if Michigan will commit to something like that right away. It's going to be interesting to see how they game plan for it instead of, like, playing team defense. Like, Beeline always had us – we're mixing up defenses all the time. Like, we played Penn State and Taylor Battle. My job was to deny Taylor Battle every time we gave up the ball. That was it. That was our game plan, then play regular everywhere else. Some other games, it was, you know, we're just going under on every ball screen, literally everyone. So you got to have these adjustments, and they do it a little bit. They've been adjusting some of their stuff, but I don't know. I haven't seen enough where, you know, like Shedrick for Virginia caught the ball at the top, against against Virginia. And there was no denial of the guards anywhere else in the court. Like, that's a great time to just have Shedrick hold the ball. Like, try your hardest to deny, full deny. There's been no, like, little things like that I've seen. But I don't know. If you think that they can just play solid against Kentucky and, like, the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah. Because the thing about Virginia is, the blocker mover that they run, it's a lot of just like pin downs, right? It's pin downs and ball screens. They basically do two things. Block remover, which is, for people who don't know, it's you basically have a guy at the top of the key and you run pin downs on either side. They try to get a shot there, then the ball moves and it's the same thing again.
Yeah.
It's I think they, what they call it is sides is what is the term that they use for, I think. And they also just run a lot of ball screen continuity, which is just a lot of ball screen stuff. And so they have counters to all that, but it's a little bit more, there's movement there. There's a lot of things going on no matter what, like there's stuff going on the weeks. Like there's a lot of movement. Whereas Kentucky's like, okay, we're going to try this. We're going to try to get this action here, but there's no like false motion to get into it. It's just kind of, you know, what's coming. So as long as you're you've seen the film, you understand what the sets are going to end up being, and you go under on severe wheel of ball screens, and you make sure that you don't let Oscar Tshiebwe get offensive rebounds. Like, what are they going to do? Yeah. They don't have guys to beat. Like, they don't have that level of talent. Like, their best player is a kid named Kayson Wallace, who might be the best on-ball defender in college since Marcus Smart. But he ain't breaking you down and giving you 30. Like, you're not really worried about that. So I don't think Kentucky is – they're not the level that we thought they were going to be this season. And I don't think that they're well enough coached to make up for the fact that they just kind of have, like, good talent, not Kentucky-level talent. So I think Michigan wins. I'll tell you this much, whatever that line ends up being, it's an 8-point line on KenPom right now. Whatever that line is on Bet Rivers, I promise you I will be betting the Michigan money line.
Is it really?
Yeah, KenPom has Kentucky as an 8-point favorite.
What is KenPom on right now? What does he see in Kentucky?
It's so right now there is still too much of the preseason projections factored in. It's not until January that like all of the preseason projections are out of there. So, cause there's not enough, like if you're just going it off doing this stuff off of the data for this season, it's too skewed because of all of the non-conference blowouts. So there's still some preseason projection data in there, which is why Kentucky is as high as they are. They're like a top 20 team.
Yeah. It's a great time to take some unders.
Yeah,
that's for sure. I got that last night, North Carolina IU. That was good for me.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game. I think they match up pretty well. I think it's going to come down to some energy and how intense Kentucky is going to play Michigan offensively. Or sorry, excuse me, defensively. Arizona State got into their stuff, got right in their face. They did not respond well. They responded a lot better against Virginia. It's going to be an interesting big man matchup, but like not your normal head-to-head matchup. Like they do very distinct things, very different things, very different styles. So it's not going to be like quite the Coburn Dickinson matchup. I feel like a little bit of that, but overall, I think they match up pretty well. Yeah, money line to me. If it's going to be that big, I'm taking money line. Let's roll with that. So far, it's been a good year taking Michigan bets, whatever it may be, over under. So far, I'm rolling with it. I don't know if you have any ending thoughts here with everything, what you want to see from Michigan specifically against Kentucky. Like give me a way that Michigan can break down Kentucky defensively. Like where is the weakness that they can exploit?
That is where Kentucky is actually pretty strong right now. Like they can guard. They have athletes all over the floor. They have guys that want to defend. I'll be very interested to see who they put Kayson Wallace on. Will they put him on? Because if you put him on someone like Jalen Llewellyn and just say, go wreak havoc. Like he could, he had 8 steals in a game earlier this year against Michigan State. He could legitimately have like 7 or 8 steals, 4, 7, or 8 turnovers. And that could be wild. What beats you because, you know, you pick the pocket, you go get those pick 6 layups. I mean, that's an easy way to get like a quick 8 to 10 points like that. So it'll be very interesting to see who he ends up guarding, because I do think it would make, there's an argument you can make where you want to put him on Jet Howard and just don't let Jet Howard get hot. Because if you shut off the water to Jet Howard and let Oscar try to push Hunter out far enough where he's catching it like 12 feet from the basket instead of 8 feet from the basket and just kind of say, all right, we'll figure it out from there. I think that's probably what I would end up doing. But I could see an argument for just, put Case into the point of attack and just say, we're not going to let Michigan get anywhere near the 3-point line to start running their offense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. That does. And hopefully they can adjust. Like, Kobe needs to bring the ball up more. They got to start initiating some of the offense in different ways. It's a lot of pressure on Jalen, first and foremost. Like, you can let Kobe bring it up. You can let Jet bring it up. Like, you got to start different ways, unique attacks. But I don't know. I'm curious how they're going to guard the ball screens. You saw a lot of the double stagger ball screen with Joey Baker starting it and then Hunter setting the second one. Mm-hmm. And I think they can kind of take advantage of that. I don't like Toppin's defense. I mean, he couldn't guard Hauser, and I think my mom could guard Hauser coming off a screen. Like, there was a lot of things I didn't like seeing some of that, and I think there's ways to, if you can keep moving, like confuse Toppin and Tshiebwe. I mean, that game was insane. Like, 2 layups. Now, it's one game. It's anecdotal. But, like, 2 layups to tie for Michigan State, like, off of blatant mistakes. So, I think there's ways where you can get guys in the top end and Tshiebwe on the perimeter and cause some confusion. I'm interested to see how many threes Hunter takes. I think it's over two, yeah, to say the least. He usually steps out when he's got a big guy like that. But I think there's going to be some adjustments there.
I really think this is the perfect time to I don't know how if Michigan does this all that much, but kind of have it be a situation where you run offense through Hunter Dickinson at like the top of the key.
Yeah. Right?
Kind of get him the ball there, run some pin downs for other people, get some kind of floppy action. See, let him kind of be the playmaker and the distributor, take the pressure off of Jalen, especially if Kaysen's on him, and see if you can't get, you know, my guess is they'll probably put Toppin on Terrence Williams to start. I don't think you would want him chasing around Jet Howard. That seems like a suboptimal idea to me. But if you can let Hunter kind of run the offense, because you're not going to, I mean, Oscar's not going to come out all the way and guard him out there. You don't want to risk picking up two silly fouls, especially early in the game. So I think that is, to me, that's the pressure release right there. And I'll be interested to see. Have they done much of that this year? You've probably
watched a little bit. They got certain sets. They have certain sets where it's one specific. He kind of catches the top. And then there's like guard or forward to guard pin downs. And then basically it ends with kind of a handoff, guard to guard, handoff to Jet. And then Hunter sprinting up for a ball screen. And it's worked really well. I think overall, they need to go to that well of the handoff with Jet. The handoff with Jet on the wing has been, and Jet is proven to be a really good passer and reading of lanes.
Hey, I'll tell you this: he's better than I thought he was,
dude. He just knows how to play, and you got to get him because he just knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he's bigger than I remembered him being. I saw him at Peach Jam. What was that? 2021. He's bigger than I remembered him. Like when I saw him there, I was like, yeah, that dude's like what, 6'5", something like that. No, he's like 6'7", 6'8", and like 220. Yeah. Like he's a big dude. I don't know if he grew or if I'm just the image that I have in my head is just him smaller than he actually is. But like he can score, he comes off screen. He's a good player. I hope you enjoy him this season.
yeah, he's been. You know, it's funny with all the hype last year with Caleb Houston and all the critique he was getting. And now Jet's come in from like pretty much day one, maybe like one or two hiccups, but pretty much day one just been consistent and really good. And now I think he's being kind of forgotten, like, oh yeah, that's what he's going to do. And he's not as appreciated, you know, but that's like college fandom in a nutshell. I feel like, you know, there's always something to critique. And always something left on the table in order, in regards to appreciating it. But so I think, you know, he's a luxury, but there's so many other things that, you know, they want to piece together to make a deep run in the tournament that right now he's the least of their worries. I think he is.
But, and it's nice to kind of have that basis, right? You know what you're going to get from Hunter more or less in a big game. You kind of know what you're going to get from
Chet. Yeah.
Like I think he's had one game where he hasn't hit double figures and he had 9 points against like, was it Presbyterian, something like that? And so you kind of know what you're going to get from those two guys. And if that's the starting point that you have with a team that is, you know, this young and this new, like that's not a bad place to be in if you're a Michigan fan. Like you haven't been playing as well as I'm sure that they would like, or they would expect given the fact that you got an All-American, but like, you're not in that bad of a spot, right? You're not Louisville.
No, good Lord. Jeez,
you're not Louisville. Depressing. You're not Michigan State getting 20 piece by Notre Dame, right?
Yeah.
With like 5.5 healthy people. So yeah, I mean
they're in a good spot.
They'll figure it out.
They're just at a constant crossroads. This is how Juwan coaches, right? It's like we're gonna figure it out for 12 games and then pretty much go from there. That's what they did last year and they figured it out. So right now they gotta make a decision. You know, it's an equal opportunity offense in a lot of different ways. So the other guys just kind of have to be a little more consistent, or they got to pivot a little bit and be like, all right, we're just going to run 60-70% of our stuff through Hunter and Jet, like very distinctly. So who knows? It's going to change a lot, but they're right there. I'm not worried about it. It's going to be fun to watch Kentucky. Do you have any final thoughts before we get out of here on the Kentucky matchup or any Michigan basketball in general?
Who do you think is the most likely player on the team to come back with a fake British accent?
Jace, but you'll love it. It won't be annoying. Like it'll be like endearing and he'll do it in a funny way. I think he's gonna. He thinks he's Tom Holland. He loves Spider-Man, so I think he's gonna like try to emulate that. But yeah, I can see Jace doing that. I'm curious to see what the media team pumps out some videos. They need to do it if they're smart enough. I need to hit up my guy T-Dot and have him British accent stuff. But I'm sure there's something in the works.
Yeah, that's all I got for you, Stu.
All right. Well, I appreciate you, Rob. It's very good. Great insight on Kentucky. So many things. I mean, my mind is scrambled with Michigan. There's just so much going on, and I've critiqued a lot, but I really like this team. I really like where they're at, the potential of everything. And I just, you know, the expectations are high, so the critiques are going to be high. So that's a good thing. You don't want to be pat on the back and told, okay, good job. You're okay. Everything's all right. Like that moral victory against Virginia still stings a little bit. So that's a good sign for them. There's still a lot of room to improve. So I'm excited for Kentucky. Take that money line, everybody, and then thank Rob later or send Venmo requests. Either way, he'll tweet it out. So appreciate you, Rob. Until next time, appreciate everybody. We'll be back to break down the Kentucky game a little bit and hopefully have a guest on. So until then, thank you.